from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it!
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Owen Valentine here with Ben Shulman. Syracuse football they're struggling right now. They dropped their, fourth consecutive game. Now with losses to Duke, Liberty, Clemson, and Wake Forest, a 38-14 final in the Carrier Dome on Saturday. Ben, it was not great, and it's a tough situation right now. A lot of questions revolving around the Syracuse defense, the Syracuse offense. The pieces that we've looked into are up in the air right now, and one of the biggest questions I think everybody has on the docket has to do with Rex Culpepper and now Jacobian Morgan. Dino Babers put him in there for a full drive at the end of the game, goes 7-for-7 for 50-plus yards and scores a touchdown. Looked like he could run this offense all right, but of course a little bit of reservations out of Babers in the press conference, not going to come out and say that this is Morgan's job, saying there's still some stuff to learn and it will be a decision made on Saturday.
Well, the worst thing I think for a football team or any sports team is stagnation. And that's what it seems like we've seen from Syracuse over the last 4 weeks. The Orange haven't performed offensively. Duke at 24 points was their highest point total of the last four games. And in that game, there was a scoop and score touchdown from the defense. And then on the defensive side, Syracuse has allowed 38 or more points in those last four matchups. Not a single game within one score. The closest margin is 14-point loss to a Duke team who hasn't won since, except for a game against Charlotte. So it's not going well right now. You said it. There is a push for fans for change, specifically under center. You mentioned Jacobian Morgan, and obviously that's the guy who pops out right now because he's the most recent young guy to make a big play with that passing touchdown and even the nice pass on the run before that. It'll be interesting. Dino Babers said in his last press conference, winning is still the most important thing. It's when they think that they can't do that anymore, will they then start to evaluate personnel. But is that something that maybe they do at the same time? Is Jacobian Morgan or some of the guys that we haven't seen coming off the bench potentially going to give Syracuse the best option to win right now? Because the guys they've thrown out there are clearly not giving the Orange a chance to come out victorious in games in the ACC.
I'm going to front with this. I like Rex Culpepper. He is an incredible guy with an incredible story. Unfortunately, it's not working on the football field for Syracuse. When PFF ranks out every quarterback that they have a grade for in the country, Rex Culpepper is dead last. It can't get any worse, Dino. Run with Jacobian Morgan. Give it a shot because this is already a terrible situation and you can put yourself in a better situation. I know you want to still win. And for whatever reason, the priority right now is to win and not to improve, because I think we're on completely different wavelengths between myself and Babers in terms of what the priority should be for the remainder of the season. You've got four games left. And I think that you can put Jacobian Morgan in there and still try to win those games. I don't think that is a conflict of interest. I think that's something that you can feasibly do, because what I saw, in the last four games, the last five games out of Rex Culpepper, it's not good. Or three games out of Rex Culpepper, excuse me. It's not good. There is a lot to be desired. And I think Wake Forest speaks for itself. He just did not have anything to offer. Comes out and just really was flat from the start. 15 of 27 for 85 yards. Really could not complete anything of too much significance except for those two interceptions that he threw, one of them a pick six. He just doesn't look like he's making the right decisions. I think he's trying to get through those reads, but there's one to two times per game where you just sit back. And I remember at Clemson, I looked to the guy sitting next to me in the press box. I was like, how can you think that that's an okay throw? And it happens too frequently out of Culpepper. So it's okay. Make that. Even if it's a little bit of a drop off to Jacobian Morgan, Rex Culpepper, the sixth year guy, is not going to be the answer right now. And he is not what this team needs moving on into the future. And you've got to roll with Morgan. I know Markowitz, he said, is close. Run with Morgan and Markowitz. Give them both some reps because you don't know what's going to happen next year. But what you do know is Rex Culpepper is not going to be there.
Culpepper has turned a team that at one point was near the tops of the country in turnover margin to a middle-of-the-pack team. Syracuse was forcing multiple turnovers a game, and Tommy DeVito, take the shots at him that you will, held on to the football, didn't throw interceptions, did a really good job of not making those huge detrimental plays to Syracuse. Rex, over the past two games, 7 turnovers, 5 interceptions, yeah, 2 fumbles lost. That's just not going to cut it. Even if Morgan produces less, if he can hold on to the football more, which we don't know. To be fair, we don't.
Correct.
But it's an unknown commodity, which at this point is better than a commodity that's just not working out. I think it's interesting, though. You say you and Dino are on different wavelengths or different, have different ideas about the team. And also you mentioned Markowitz. So Dino recently, about right before we hopped on, released the depth chart for Boston College. He still has Rex as QB1. He has Morgan as QB2 and Markowitz as 3. There used to be an or with Morgan and Markowitz. That has been removed despite his comments that they are at the same level, or that this was just because Morgan got more reps and now Markowitz is going to get more reps. Also, while he put out that depth chart, when asked about the QB situation post-game and in his Monday press conference, he didn't confirm whatsoever that Rex Culpepper would be the guy going out there on the field. I happen to think sometimes, you know, sometimes I disagree with Dino on major things, and sometimes I just think, you know, he understands that, or he's very careful with what he says is probably a better way to put it. And so I think he could be pulling our leg a little bit here. You know, he's been negging Jacobian Morgan for days now. And I think that could be all with the intention of getting Jeff Hafley off balance, throwing him out there, and giving BC a look at a guy who, frankly, you know, has 7 passes of tape to study. 7 passes, yeah, in high school.
It's a tough situation. It's a tough situation to put Hafley in, and I don't know if that's the plan for Babers. I know that the depth charts are never too telling, but, I mean, the removal of the or says that Morgan has made that jump, and it is, you know, official that he will be the number two, is the number two, and is beat out Markowitz in that situation. But this is not a situation that we are going to find out about too early, because this is something that Dino is going to hold close to the chest and not really give any intel to media, because intel to the media means that Jeff Hafley is going to be prepared as much as he can for whatever quarterback trots out there. He's going to want to roll with the element of surprise in that, as much as, you know, it doesn't necessarily make all that big a difference. Neither of them are you know, a top-tier quarterback in the ACC by any stretch of the imagination. But it is a different look, and it'll be interesting to see what he ends up doing. Another thing that is, you know, important for Syracuse right now in terms of, you know, that win mentality that they're holding on to ever so tightly, regardless of circumstance, they do get Dakota Davis back this week. He hopped on for a little bit at the end of last week's game, and started to, you know, he was there, but they still wanted to get him a little more before he jumps back into that prominent role. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, his contributions and how that changes things, because Syracuse has still been sacked at a greater rate than any team in the ACC has this season. So any help on that line will be of great benefit, and, you know, will help boost whatever quarterback is behind center for a little bit longer. So we'll be interested to see how that one pans out. And, you know, when you move forward, we've talked this Wake Forest game in terms of the key points. I think there's some more stuff that we could dive into, but in terms of generalities, not a great game for the Orange. They didn't look like they had it. And, you know, it reflects in the score when you drop 38-14, but you move on to a Boston College team who is, you know, your counterpart in giving Clemson its two toughest games of the season so far, score-wise, and most competitive games of the season. So BC is a team that, you know, they're 4-3. They've got some quality wins. They've got some losses on the record. They're a different team than what you'd expect, though, Ben.
A really interesting football team. You know, of course, the way they're different, as you're alluding to, is forever Boston College has been a run-first football team, and Syracuse saw that firsthand last year with an annihilation from A.J. Dillon and David Bailey amounting to nearly
500 yards.
Ridiculous numbers, but they lose Dillon to the NFL. They bring in Phil Jurkovec from Notre Dame, and now this is a pass-happy offense. I mean, Jurkovec has attempted the most passes of anyone in the ACC. He's fifth in the FBS in yards. Some will say, you know, he's 48th in the FBS in yards per attempt, so it's there's a little give and take here with how much weight you want to put into his total numbers. But this is an offense who was at the top of the ACC last year in rushing yards per game and near the bottom in passing. And those two have completely flip-flopped. Now it's a pass-heavy offense. They have four, if not five, capable receiving options, depending on when Kobe White is available. I mean, he won't be back against Syracuse, but later in the season – They found gems out of nowhere, and right when you think, oh, you know, we have these guys in check in the passing game, you turn around, David Bailey's still there, who rushed on the orange for 172 yards last time. And, you know, as much as they're a pass-heavy offense, I would assume happily game plans to the scheme of the defenses he's coming up against. I foresee a massive game from David Bailey as he had last year.
It's interesting to see because this is, as you mentioned, an offense that has really, you know, flipped things around. And it's been, you know, a pretty quick transition under Jeff Hafley, and maybe it's some early luck played into it. But they've done a really good job at taking the advantage you have of Phil Jurkovec and really rolling with that. He's a guy who played a little bit at Notre Dame, never really got too much going over there, and comes in. He's a top-tier quarterback. He's a good player and a guy that is really – really, you know, working for this offense, and it's completely changed things around. He's averaging 270 yards a game through the air. He's got 14 touchdowns, just four interceptions on the season. He's really figured it out, but it's something that switches when you're going to play this Syracuse defense. It's a team that has consistently shown that it struggles to stop the run game, and that doesn't even mean that you've got great running backs on your team. It just means that Syracuse struggles to stop the run game. They've shown it time and time again. Liberty, Duke, the opposing team, rushed for over 700 combined yards. It is not what, you know, any defense wants to look like, but they haven't necessarily shown too big an adjustment in terms of stopping the run game. And so it's going to be an interesting opportunity because Jeff Hafley has turned this offense into a pass-first team with a little bit of running sprinkled in, as we'll hear a little bit more about in a second. And that's not necessarily the best way of approach to this Syracuse defense. You're going to have to pound the ground a little bit because that'll throw the defense off and really allow your passing game to thrive the most. But if you try to just come in and pure pass against the orange, I think that's actually going to give Syracuse a massive advantage in this one.
An interesting wrinkle on the Syracuse side is Trill Williams, who wasn't in their last game. He's listed on the depth chart, although he has that italicized or with Amon Greenwood under him. That's a massive difference between Amon Greenwood, the redshirt freshman, and Trill Williams, the junior. Williams, with Cisco out, you know, not really a part of the program anymore, Williams is in my opinion, the best run stopper in the secondary. You know, kudos to Rob Hanna for playing, you know, above what you would think a freshman does this year. But Trill Williams is hard-hitting, really athletic, makes plays on the ball, can strip guys, as we've seen again in the past against Wake Forest. So, you know, if Williams is in there, then maybe as Jeff Hafley, I'm saying, all right, we can do a little more of what we usually do. I know that goes counter to some people who think of Williams as an interceptor of the ball, but I'd be most worried if I'm Hafley about Williams getting in there and being a run stopper. If he's not there and you're running through Jahad Carter, Rob Hanna, and Amon Greenwood, assuming you get past the linebackers, that's how you have a performance like we saw Shedrell Lewis having for Liberty, where you have, you know, 140 plus rushing yards in the first half because the lack of size in the Syracuse run stoppers, especially when you get to the secondary, has really burned the orange this year.
Yeah, and to kind of look a little bit more into the Boston College offense and how they could go about playing this Syracuse defense, we caught up yesterday with Julian Benbow of the Boston Glow. Really cool interview, really nice guy. Loved hearing what he had to say. A lot of cool stuff, a lot of interesting ideas, and some fun comparisons to toss in there. So Julian Benbow of the Boston Globe. We now welcome on Julian Benbow. He is the reporter for the Boston Globe covering Boston College football, basketball, and all things Boston College, basically. Julian, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, man.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, just to get things going, I just want to start broad here. What is your favorite part of this BC team? They're kind of fun to watch right now.
Oh, man. I never looked at it in terms of favorites, right? But I think they're more energized. You know what I mean? This is a more energetic season, if you can have one, considering the circumstances, right? Which is odd because you didn't know what you were going to get coming into this year, you know? Obviously with the pandemic and just the type of season, all the circumstances, what the energy was going to be like, what the commitment level, what people's focus would be, and what the challenges would be, right? And then you got that on top of like a first-year head coach, trying to install a new system, and you know, trying to balance between like the normal kind of like campaigning, for lack of a better term, that a first-year coach does, you know, to garner support within like the alumni and the fan base. So there's always that, right? There's always like the required, like, let's get pumped, like the get psyched mix or whatever. Versus like the reality that like, whatever this is like a coach who's inheriting some pieces, trying to bring in some pieces of his own and at least make it look presentable until he gets his own guys in, right? So there was a lot of like not knowing what this was going to be, and then you look up and it's like, this isn't bad. Like this, you know, the record is what it is, right? Like they're above 500, they're competing. You can do what you want with that, but like the morale is just a lot higher than what it was at the end of the run with Steve Adazio, and that makes it different. Like you kind of wonder, you're always curious what it'd be like if there were fans, and if the, you know what, you can't get like a real read on what the response is because it's still most of it you're seeing on Twitter, nobody's there. So you do wish you could bump into some people, see how people respond, see how people are actually engaging beyond just like social media and things of that nature. But yeah, the morale is higher. I think that part has been the most interesting.
How much of that morale boost do you attribute specifically to the job that Halfley has done, rather than just the fact that there's a new head coach? And as you said, you know, there's always going to be a bit of excitement when a new, you know, regime comes in to change things up.
That's a fair point, right? I think change is immediate, right? It's always like that honeymoon stage. And I think you might still be in that a little bit, right? Like, you know, people kind of forget that in 2013, whatever it might have been, Steve Adazio was hired. People actually liked Steve Adazio, you know what I mean? Like that time period went by and it got kind of it got kind of bleak by the end of it, but you know, that first year he had the fans rallied up in much the same way. But yeah, I think you get that initial like, wow, we got a guy from Ohio State that is, you know, big time and he's had NFL experience and yada yada yada, and that carries you through a certain point, right? Like especially right now, like people's priorities are a little bit different, and in some ways maybe, you know, that is still some kind of hope that you can cling to, right? But then like once you go out and see them play well, right? Like you see them play well at Duke, right? You see them play well against Texas State. You see them play well against UNC, and the types of games they had that were kind of close and, you know, kind of like nail biters at the end that you have to kind of watch and like you're invested in. I think that buys some stock too, right? Or that buys some goodwill too. So I think in that sense, it's like, oh, it's not just that you're selling us hope, right? Which you kind of have to unless you aren't winning, right? There's the old AD Martin Jarman used to say, like, you either sell hope or you sell winning. And right now we're selling hope, right? So, yeah, you're past that stage where you're selling hope and you got to, you know, you're at a point where you can start showing some productivity.
This is an offense that has really been, you know, reshaped since Hafley took over. Last year, you look at them top in the ACC in rushing yards, second to last in pass yards, and they basically flipped the switch this year, and now they're amongst the top of the ACC in pass yards and second to last in rushing yards. How much do you kind of attribute that to Hafley's like offense, and then also like when you've got a guy like Phil Jurkovic throwing the ball, like how much does that help as well?
Listen, so I haven't written this yet, and it's on. I'll tuck it. I got it tucked away. I'll write it at some point. But I actually asked Hafley this, right? It's gonna the way I asked it sounds a lot better than the way I asked him sounded a lot better than what I'm going to say to you now. But it's pretty much the same thought, right? Like, since when a coach comes in, this is pretty much the exact same answer. When a coach comes in, right? Like they always say, like, you know, I look at the roster and see what I have, and then build the offense around it, not the other way around. And it's like, I got to look at my pieces and see what I can do. And in my head, I was like, I mean this in the most respectful way possible. What about this roster made you think that it could be the second best passing offense in the ACC? Like, just hit me. Just let me know. Like, look at me and, like, tell me, like, how do you look at this? Because not even about, you know, personnel, players, talent level, whatever. It was like, that offense was like run, 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 run some more, run it again, run it until you're tired, run it until the cows come home. And it's like, no, you know, who comes in and is like, yo, you know what? I was thinking about this run heavy offense. Let's just turn it into a high octane passing attack and see what happens. You know what I mean? How do you sell that to people? Like, yeah, I know this is your identity, right? That's really, you know what I mean? Like what do you do with that? So, and yeah, I think a part of that was Frank Cignetti. I think that was a big – Frank and Tim are, like, you know, big for Jeff as coordinators. But Cignetti is a big part of it, just, like, his idea and a lot of the things he wanted to do with, like, a pro-passing offense. Like, they're creative, and they knew that that's what they wanted to do, and while still incorporating some of the run game, right? Like, I thought it was hilarious. Might have been Narduzzi early in the year over Pitt. It was like, they kind of just run the ball just to say they ran it. And I was like, yo, that is the most – that is the least BC thing I've ever heard. Like, this is – you know, I know everybody – when something that happens that is counter to the norm this year, they attribute it just to 2020. It's like, well, that's the most 2020 thing ever. But, no, nah, that was surreal. I was like, BC just runs the football to run it. But, yeah, I think they – Frank had designs on what he wanted to do with the offense. They were looking for a quarterback, and even though there was a cursory competition, they knew that Phil was one of the guys that they could get done with. And then when they explained it to Phil, the vision for what they could see with the offense, obviously he bought in. It didn't take him very long. I think it was like a 4-day process once he entered the portal or something like that. So, I think they had designs on what they could do now. I think more than Phil, I think the interesting part is just the weapons that apparently they had sitting there the whole time. You know what I mean? Like, everybody knew about Zay, and he was underused last year, right? Kobe White was their leading receiver, not as a tight end, but just as a receiver. He got hurt at the beginning of the year, right? And you're thinking, damn, like, excuse me, you're thinking, man, like, there goes, you know, their number one pass catcher, right? And then all of a sudden you get, like, Jalen Gill, Ohio State transfer, coming in and making a name for himself. C.J. Lewis coming in, you know what I mean? Jelani Galloway or whatever. Obviously, Hunter Long is still leading all tight end. It's like, man, they have a lot of different options in the pass game that you didn't necessarily visualize before because they were underused or whatever. So the quarterback's going to get a lot of praise, and he should, but I just think the cooler part is how they've uncovered so many different options in the offense that weren't necessarily being utilized.
How has C.J. Lewis made such a big jump? I mean, in 2018, you know, 12 receptions, 143 yards. He has two catches last year. He only played in one game, to be fair. And then this year, 285 yards in six games, almost 16 yards of reception, four touchdowns. I mean, he's one of their top guys.
That to me has been a question that I still need to answer. Just like, again, it's just like, how do you keep unturned over? Because it was every week, right? Like, there was a new face. Like, Zay was the one that popped up in the first week. CJ, obviously. Hunter. But if you look and you're like, how do you keep finding – it's almost like a different guy emerges as somebody who can be an option, right? And so, CJ, I was just kind of like, Yeah, you're right. He was under you. But that's the thing. Like, everybody feels like they, even Zay was. So I don't really have an answer for that one. Just like, how is he's confident. He has the ability. He has like hands on him. He can make concentration catches, but he can also be like a downfield threat, which is you know what a team like that needs. I honestly just how it happened because again, like he's kind of it's almost like they're uncovering the you know gems on their own roster, which is like I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that one where it's just like wow, these guys were fully capable the whole time, but you know we weren't really utilizing. That's probably the coolest part again of the season for me. It's just like these guys were here the whole time. So I'm sorry.
It's like it's a weird juxtaposition almost where it's you know it's Adazio's recruit, but Halfley has found a way to activate him.
It makes you wonder.
Yeah, that
Adazio, it makes you wonder.
Never before. It's almost like they should be some sort of team. But a guy that's gone maybe slightly in the other direction, David Bailey.
Yeah.
You know, he was the second back behind A.J. Dillon last year, but he had 844 rushing yards, tore up Syracuse. I mean, I think every SU fan remembers when Dillon and Bailey ran the offense themselves.
How many yards did they run for, like 1,000 that day? Like,
he had 172.
If I recall right, I think that was the game. Like, there was a Packer scout there that was like, I saw A.J. run for 1,000,000 yards. Led to traffic, like, if I recall right.
Look, as a Packers fan myself, as soon as we drafted A.J. Dillon in the second round, I was like, this guy's legit. Because of that game, watching Bailey and Dillon run over everyone, it hasn't been a bad year for Bailey, but his yards per carry is down a lot from 5.7 to now 3.6 this season. Do you just think it's less reps, or has there been actually a drop-off in terms of the talent?
Yeah, no, it's touches, and it's not necessarily any fault of his own. It's just like the offensive philosophy changed. You know what I mean? And I think they've given him a lot of credit and a lot of praise for not pouting, not being you know selfish about it, and not in any way making it about him, which is hard to do, right? This would have been a big year for him. This was a year where he's like taking the reins from AJ, making a statement for himself. And, you know, you come to BC, like I said, where, you know, you think that, you know, the identity of the program is running the football, and then, you know, a regime change happens. And even still, you think that you're going to be a centerpiece of what might happen after. But, I mean, there's no way. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, they lay out the game plan and everything for them. And it's weird, right? Like, so as a staff, they want to establish what they want to do offensively, right? Like their foundation offensively, right? But at the same time, it's like, man, like you understand that, but there's still some give and take with the run game, right? Like that's why I thought what Narduzzi said was funny. It was like they're running it just to say they ran it, and for the first few weeks of the season, it felt that way, but. You know, they're still trying to commit to the run. And in the past, like, 2 weeks, you've seen Bailey become more part of the offense, right? Like, and it's not like they don't use running backs, right? Like, they'll have Garbo, they'll have Bailey, and they'll have a few other cats mixed in, Travis Levy and things of that nature move, and people like that move in and out. But that pass game is just what they're doing right now, and it's effective. So it changes a lot of plans for David, right? Whatever he might have, which is cool. But I mean, he's always been like a solid dude, like just a team first dude. And he's taken it well, which is the best thing you can ask for in like a team concept. Even if it's not necessarily the thing that benefits him the most.
Syracuse,
and that's like a statement in a transit. That's like kind of what happened in the transition year, right? Like.
Yeah.
People have to make kind of sacrifices or whatever.
Syracuse has, you know, struggled in the run game throughout this season, you know, drastically. And their secondary is one of the few spots that have looked all right. Is this possibly a week where, you know, Halfley could switch the plan a little bit and start to utilize Bailey again a little bit more? Could we see like a sort of resurgence for a week out of Bailey?
Maybe, right? Like, I think a couple of weeks ago against Georgia Tech, they recommitted to the running game heavy, right? Which I don't think they shy away from running the ball. I think they're just going to make a game plan that kind of attacks weaknesses or whatever. But if 2 weeks ago was any indication, then yeah, they'll run it. But I mean, they're still going to throw it. I don't think they have any like fear of anybody's like secondary. Like, they want to take shots down the field. They want to make plays. So you see a little bit of both. Even if they – like, it's not – you're not going to see – I don't think you're going to see David run the ball, like, 30, 40 times. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think you're going to see anybody – they're not going to run the ball, like, many times. I have not gotten any shred of evidence that this is going to be, like, one of those teams that's like, you know, guess what? They're lining it up again. You know what I mean? Like, I haven't – there's nothing that I've seen that makes me think that that's going to be the brand of football they roll out.
I just took a look back at the box score from last year, because it's actually – we're recording this Tuesday. It's a year ago yesterday, Syracuse, right? BC,
yeah.
496 rushing yards.
Yeah, I do remember. That was
just ludicrous. Yeah. You know, they've obviously shown the ability to both attack teams in the air and on the ground. One of their major issues, if there is one, though, is penalties. Both sides of the ball, the offense and the defense. But the offense ranks – bottom 15 in penalties and penalty yards per game.
Yeah.
Are these in-play penalties, pre-snap penalties? You know, what seems to be the main issue here for Boston College, right?
It's a mix. I haven't looked at them, like, I haven't broken them down, and I probably should. But, yeah, you got some pre-snaps and some, like, silly ones. The ones that kind of are – I don't know if they're alarming to Halfley or not, but I think they're alarming to people watching games because they're the most noticeable, right? Like personal fouls. I think those ones, you know, there were a couple. Is that UNC? Assume it was UNC. That like late in the game, just like back-to-back personal fouls. And it's just like unsportsmanlike conduct, rough in the passer. And I feel like, bless his heart, because Isaiah McDuffie's a solid, like really, really, like he's like the nicest kid. You know this cliche already. You've watched Dexter. He's the nicest kid, like, off the football field. He is a war machine on the field. He is like it is violence, like, personified on the field. And I know Halfley wants, he said this, that he wants them to play right on that line. You know, you hear a lot of coaches say that. You want to play like right on the line or whatever, which is fine, but I think they're still finding it. It's like finding out where that line is for aggression, and sometimes it costs them. I don't think not that you want the penalties or whatever, but, you know, if a DB gets a PI, right, like you'll see a lot of those. Like there was a PI in sort of in another close game situation later on in the season. I can't remember which game, which I gotta stop being old. I'm getting old. But they were like PIs late game versus like, man, it was Brandon Sebastian. But it was like, man, like bad timing. But I don't think Halfley, like, and I think that's what you want as a coach. But I don't think Halfley, not that he doesn't mind, I don't think he's sweating it that hard. You know what I mean? I think he understands that let him play free, let him be aggressive, and then like teach it later, like teach it after. You know what I mean? So while they're alarming and they might be a little bit costly, like I think it's just kind of taken as kind of as a operational hazard or whatever, a cost of doing business rather than, you know, something to drill relentlessly. I think more than anything, they drilled the tackling more than the penalties, and that's been sort of cleaned up.
All right. So let's put you in the shoes. You're Syracuse's defensive coordinator for the week. What's the best way to attack the BC offense?
Man, I haven't played Madden in years. oh, man.
Is there a key to, like, keeping them in check? Like, what is the best way to approach them?
I think the same with every – I think that's, like, a general football principle, right? Get a lot of pressure on Phil Jacoby, like, if you can. And make him make decisions quick. You know what I mean? See if he can turn the ball over. See if, you know, like a play, see if he can bust open a play. Like he's had a couple of those where he's either, and not many, right? He's not like super mistake prone, but he's had a couple where, you know, if a play breaks down, he'll try to improvise out of it to salvage the play, and it'll end in a turnover. Or, you know, he had like a grounding penalty or something like that last week against Clemson. Or, you know, he'll – but that's the thing. Like, they do draw up enough plays where there are, like, a lot of opportunities downfield, right? And he'll miss them. So, I mean, just don't give him options to – don't make it easy for him to pick, like, the downfield route. You know what I mean? So, keep some pressure on him, man. And don't make it easy to get to the targets he likes. You know what I mean? You know who he likes, right? Like, downfield is Zay. His safety is Hunter. And just don't make it easy to get to him.
All right, last on the docket. Vegas is saying 14 points right now. Do you have a score prediction for us? How do you see this game going?
I am terrible at scores, man. Like, what I have subscribed to in my lifetime is not to pick games. The paper makes me do it every week, and I hate it with all my heart, man. I can never call the future.
Believe me, we are worse. We are remotely close.
Yeah.
I mean, and I applaud your effort. Like, just the fact that you guys still have, like, the gumption to be like, let me try to see what's going to happen in the future. Like, the premise to me is, like, that just sounds like how you go crazy. I'm sure it's fun. But, oh, man. Vegas has a knack for being right. So, they said 14 BCs, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's tough. What was the over under?
All right, I got 53.5.
Now, yeah, I can see BC scoring 30.
So you want 30 yeah. to
30 16? You'll keep it right on the line,
somewhere around here. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I think our other prediction was 31-21 from our other BC writer. So you're both.
That's the thing. That's interesting, right? Like there's a lot of faith in this offense. No, this is fun though. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Hopefully, if basketball season gets geared up and we're going, if you
Hold up. I'll be around. Yeah,
if
for
you
sure.
want to hop on, we can talk.
We'd love to check up.
For sure. Always a pleasure.
All right, thank you, Julian. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Y'all guys, take care.
You too.
Yep.
Another thank you to Julian Benbow for shining a light on the offense of Boston College. Now let's flip around to the defensive side of things. You know, it's an interesting squad for Boston College on the defensive side, as you can see. I mean, there are, you know, two brand new pieces in Jeff Hafley, head coach, and Tim Lukaboo, their defensive coordinator, both brand new, both with a good amount of NFL experience coaching in the NFL. So bringing back some new philosophies, and it's interesting to see how they've contributed, because this is a BC defense that has held their own for a little bit, and they held their own against DJ Uiagalelei and the Clemson team last week. So they were able to do that for a while. Just, you know, it's hard to, as Syracuse knows, the last two seasons, it is hard to hold Clemson off for a full 60 minutes. And you can get those chances, you can get up early. It is hard to play a complete 60 and stay on top of Clemson the whole time. So they found that one out last week against Clemson, but the defense didn't look too bad. A big time, you know, they got fortunate on the 1 yard line for a 99 yard fumble recovery for a touchdown. So they had some stuff going for them on the defensive side, but this is an interesting defense with a couple of big names as well.
Yeah. You know, you start with Isaiah McDuffie and Max Richardson in the middle, the two linebackers. And as we'll hear later in the episode, they don't play very similar, but the stats look pretty similar. At 69 tackles apiece, they're tied for the lead in the Power Five and second overall in the FBS. This defense is, you know, I just think, and I mean this in the best way possible, it's average to above average. That's what the stats suggest. You know, the 26.3 points per game is slightly better than Boston College allowed last season. They're sixth in the ACC. In total yards allowed per game at 393, they're sixth in the ACC. They give up the sixth least passing yards and the eighth least rushing yards. You know, their biggest strength is probably turnovers. BC has turned over the ball pretty well, almost two turnovers a game. They're still kind of middle of the pack for the ACC, but in the upper echelon of the middle of the pack teams. And their worst facet is that they take a lot of penalties. You know, BC has 67 penalty yards per game. That's the fifth most in the conference, and 7.6 penalties per game, fifth most in the conference. So it's, you know, it's not in the best defense you're going to see this year. It's not the worst defense you're going to see this year for Syracuse. You know, limiting turnovers is big, and let BC be the one to shoot themselves in the foot. Syracuse has taken most of its penalties on offense this year as opposed to defense. Really limit your false starts, illegal formations. You know, do what you can to be as clean as possible, especially pre-snap, because, you know, there's been a tendency for Boston College to get in a little bit of trouble when they get over-aggressive, as Halfley likes to be, and take penalties that could cost them in crucial moments. I mean, this is a team, as I'll get into more in my score prediction, that's played a ton of close games this year. And if you can keep it close, a late penalty on the BC defense could be really crucial to Syracuse trying to pull out a win.
Yeah, I think the best way to put it, and you kind of hit the nail right on the head there, the defense does enough. They keep them in games, and they win a lot of close games. I mean, you look through, they allowed, you know, a close game to Texas State, which is not something that you really want to see. But the three losses for Boston College are all to, I mean, basically the top of the ACC. You've got a loss to Clemson in a close game that you were leading for a while. You've got a loss to North Carolina, who has fallen a little bit, but is a good football team and one of the better teams in the ACC, and a loss to Virginia Tech a couple of weeks ago. And I think they were ranked at that point as well. So they've got quality losses on the schedule. There was only really one game where they got blown out, and that was that Virginia Tech game where VT just, you know, they ran all over them. They found a way to just exploit this defense. But I don't think that's something that's going to be a frequent occurrence. The defense does just enough. And they're able to keep them in games, and that's why they win close football games. But it's an interesting point you bring up about how a penalty could cost them late, because they have had some unwarranted penalties from a guy that you know, Syracuse almost got to know. Isaiah McDuffie was committed to Syracuse for a brief period and decommitted, ends up at Boston College. So a guy that now leads the ACC in the Power Five in tackles, could have been an Orange, but ends up changing his mind at the last second. So it was an interesting thing to see him on Saturday. See if you know, maybe someone asked him a question after the game about you know, the relation. I'm sure it's been asked in the past. I'll look into it. Maybe we'll send out a tweet at Ostrom Avenue Pod. You can find us there on Twitter. Shoot us a follow. We've got some great polls out there. We want you guys to interact. Let us know your thoughts on those situations. But to give us his thoughts on the Boston College defense, we also caught up with AJ Black. He's the editor and publisher of Boston College Sports Illustrated and the host of Locked On BC. So a lot of good stuff from AJ Black, a lot of more in-depth insight on some of the intricacies of this BC defense. We now welcome on AJ Black. He's the editor and publisher of Sports Illustrated Boston College and the new host of Locked On BC. So go check that out for him. Give him a subscription over there. Twitter at AJBlack_BC. AJ, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Owen and Ben, for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. One more little accolade for you, AJ. I left out of the opening intro. Owner of a terrible fantasy football team.
Yes, if you've been following my fantasy football problems, you can check me out on Twitter. I have one of the worst teams I've ever had. It makes me look like I'm the worst fantasy owner in the world. I swear I've been much better than this, but drafting Cam Newton and then getting Nick Chubb and George Kittle and OBJ. Whew, my team is a dumpster fire right now.
I also have Nick Chubb and George Kittle, to be honest. My team is still performing pretty well, but I feel your pain there. I'm scrambling right now to find a tight end because I was not holding a backup.
And I've done so many leagues too where you can look through the waiver wires and find people, but I'm in this league with another BC writer, and that group, I can't get anybody. I can't find anyone on the waiver wire. This is junk all over the place. And so I'm just like replacing junk with junk and ending up with like 50, 55 points a week. It's terrible.
It is a struggle. It is a very real struggle. I got my first win in one of my leagues this week. So I'm off the 0-7 train finally. But to get back in here, how is everything been for you coverage wise, you know, through all this? Like, what are some of the major changes that you've seen in that you've had to adjust in terms of your coverage of BC?
Yeah, so everything's on Zoom, just like a lot of the other ACC schools. So, you know, when we talk to Jeff Hafley or the players, it's all on Zoom. They have limited amounts of press passes. I don't go just because of family member issues with COVID. I just don't want to risk it. It doesn't really make much of a difference anyways, because I can do it all via Zoom anyways. Mm-hmm. But so that's been an issue. But the big thing, you just have to watch everything on TV. And so it's kind of hard to see sometimes what's going on. You know, you watch on the ACC network and they have some funky camera angles, or they cut in the middle of a play and you miss it. So that's been a challenge. And then I have YouTube TV, and they just dropped NESN. And I think they're dropping YES in the New York area. So they're dropping all of their regional sports networks. So for this weekend's game, I got to figure out, I'm either going to ask my parents or look at another cable subscription network, because I'm going to get locked out if I don't figure this out.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting year for coverage. When it comes to doing Zoom press conferences and stuff like that, what are the challenges as opposed to when you're covering in person?
We have a joke with the BC press pool. We're starting, and the coaches' staff is in it too, because they think it's hilarious. We have a swear jar, basically, for every time that we do not hit unmute when we start to ask a question. If we actually put in money on that, that jar would be up to like $30-$35. And all of us have been guilty of it at one point or another. And I think that's been a big challenge. It's being able to like get your technology working. We all mess up on it. And sometimes we're in the midst of, like, we were talking to Hafley after the Clemson game, and I don't even know where this came from, but Phil Dracovic's voice just started booming through. So there was some issue on their end where they were crossing lines. So you have those issues as well. And you know, it's not as, it's different in a sense that, like, you don't get to be there to talk to the coach in like a face-to-face manner, which has its own, like, you know, almost like intimacy. Like, you just, like, get to know them. You get to know what they're thinking in a different way. But you're behind a screen now, so it doesn't feel the same. It's a little different.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. You lose that well said with the intimacy thing. Like, that is it. And to start looking into this team a little bit, we're going to, you know, look specifically to the defense here for the most part. But when you look at the two coaches that are doing most of the stuff for BC, Jeff Hafley and Tem Lukubu, both with the NFL experience. And what are some of, like, the changes that you've seen them bring in through, you know, you're past midway through the season now?
Yeah, I mean, if you looked at the differences in BC's defense between 2019 and 2020, it's night and day. And you start by looking at the secondary. Now, that's Jeff Hafley's bread and butter. He was the defensive coordinator at Ohio State, but he was also the defensive back coach, and he was a defensive back coach for years before that at his various stops at Rutgers and Pitt and in the NFL. And you immediately see the improved technique and play and the aggressiveness of the defense. Under Steve Addazio, the secondary, he did a nice job of recruiting talent. You know, you see Justin Simmons in the NFL and Isaac Yiadom and Josh Johnson, and there's some big names out there, Will Harris, that he brought up the talent. I just didn't really think, especially near the end, that his schemes matched the talent that he had. Now, Hafley has them playing super aggressive. So they're playing tight man coverage almost all the time. And he worked with them on jarring the ball loose, stripping the ball, playing super aggressive. He says calling it violent. They play violently. And you can see it. You know, instead of the Addazio system of giving a cushion, making sure they don't beat you with the long play, make sure it's, you know, death by a thousand paper cuts, it was more of that, like, softer zone that good teams like Clemson and Louisville and, you know, in Syracuse, when you had Dungy, could just rip BC apart because they just were so soft on that. That's changed. Big difference. And then on top of that, you know, Hafley and Lokabu, they did a really nice job of addressing weaknesses on the defense, really hitting that transfer portal. You looked and you could see the defensive line was going to be a major issue this year. And they went in and they got three grad transfers to kind of fill in those gaps. They got Luke Beckett from Cal. He's a defensive tackle slash defensive end. He's kind of a tweener. He's playing defensive tackle right now. He started for 3 years for Cal, came over when they thought the Pac-12 wasn't going to happen. He said that he wanted one more year, and he thought BC was his best option. He's a starter. There's Boozy Nwuka from up in your area. He's from Buffalo. He played for them last year. He's another defensive tackle. I'm not sure what's going on with him because he was a starter for the beginning of the season, and he's kind of, you know, he's moved back in the depth chart a little bit. I don't know if it was, you know, his ability or what's going on, but they have another guy starting over him. And then they have Max Roberts, who's a transfer from Maine. Now, when he was announced that he was coming to BC, I was like, yeah, okay, it's an FCS guy. You know, he's going to be buried in the depth chart. That's nice. They're giving him a chance. The guy has 4.5 sacks in 5 games. I don't know where he came from, but he's incredible. He's got good speed. He's good for one good play. He had the one sack against Clemson last week. He hit Pitt when there was third down, and it looked like, you know, Pitt was going to take the lead against BC. Max Roberts again with the sack. So he's another addition. So they've added depth where they need it. And I think just that in combination with the scheme changes has really improved the way that BC's playing on D.
Yeah, I'm happy you brought up Max Roberts because he's maybe the most interesting guy on this roster. He played 3 years at Fordham. Then he transfers to Maine. And then on September 26th of this year, he grad transfers to BC right before the first game of the season. So has it been that one big play? Is it maybe more of a fluke? Maybe not a fluke, but opportunistic 4 sacks? Or is he really, you know, becoming an elite pass rusher in the ACC?
I don't know if I would call him elite yet, but he's definitely the fastest, like the quickest pass rusher they have. And I don't know where that came from. And, you know, he looks like he plays a lot of exclusively on passing downs. I don't think it's fluky. I think he's just got that knack for getting past defenders, and he gives BC something on that defensive line they don't have, which is a pass rusher, somebody who can get to the quarterback, because the other three, you can watch a whole game and not see them do much of anything in terms of getting towards the quarterback.
One of the other guys I wanted to look into a little bit is Max Richardson, and I know Syracuse definitely remembers his performance against them last season, 2 forced fumbles and a sack last year, and he is, you know, continuing to play really well this year. 69 tackles he's got at, I believe, 6 tackles for loss so far. Really been a strong presence. What has he done, and what makes him so good?
So, Max, we were talking about Max Roberts. They call it the Max Square Sack. They've had a couple of them where the two of them make a sack. They actually go by Maximilian, so it's the Maximilian Squared Sack by both of them. But what Max Roberts does, Max Richardson, excuse me, is he's a leader. And that's, you know, on a team that has a bunch of grad transfers up front, they've got some youth in the secondary. He provides stability. He's a vocal leader on that squad. He talks about it all the time, that he leads by example. And he's a big deal in that sense. On top of that, he's a consistent player. Now, I don't think of Max Richardson. I know he had the big game against Syracuse last year, and he has a play here and there. I don't think of him as much of a disruptive player. He just is consistent in making sure big plays don't happen. He doesn't, you know, he's not big in interceptions. He doesn't force a lot of fumbles, but he's clean in his hits. He's where he needs to be. He doesn't make mistakes. And I think that's good. I mean, BC does lack a dynamic defender, like a guy that can take over a game. Like you've seen in years past, there was Harold Landry and Zach Allen. They've had even further back, Mark Herzlig, Luke Kuechly. They've had guys in the past that can take over games. They don't have that right now. And Max Richardson, I thought, might be that guy this year. He really hasn't done that. But he's doing well. You know, he leads the country in tackles. He does what he needs to do. And I think the big thing with him is you don't catch him making big mistakes. And I think that was a big issue with BC last year, were those broken plays there'd be a guy left completely uncovered. Richardson and talking about the scheme and the coaches, they've done a nice job of preventing that from happening. Because if you watch Colorado State and our old coach last week, it was still continuing with them. So it seems like it's a coaching issue, but that's for either here or there, neither here or there.
Beside Richardson is Isaiah McDuffie, and he co-leads the country in tackles. Yep. You know, he's got double the sacks with 3, an interception. Is he more of a big play guy than Richardson, even if he's not the disruptor in a defense? Yeah.
Yeah, another New York native for you guys. McDuffie's from Buffalo. I think of him kind of as the emotional leader. But keep an eye on him because his emotions can get pretty high. He's been nailed for at least two or three personal fouls this year because he gets himself too revved up and lets it go. But he's more, I think of him a little bit more disruptive. He can pull out a big play here and there, and he's a little bit more inconsistent than Max Richardson. Max Richardson knows what he needs to do and he does it. You get McDuffie in open space. Sometimes he's not the most consistent tackler, but he does, I think he has 69 tackles along with Richardson. They both have I think they're first in the country in tackles. So he's doing what he needs to do. He's a consistent player. In most cases, get him in space, he's a little bit more of a liability.
What do you see as the biggest strength of this defense?
The secondary. They don't allow lots of big plays. You saw some of them with Clemson, with ETN, but who's going to – you got to have a whole defensive backfield full of elite players to cover him. And you don't see them – I mean, like Amari Rodgers did all right, but you don't see them allowing those big explosives anymore. They're usually pretty good about preventing them, and they make turnovers. I think turnovers is always a key with BC. You saw it against Clemson, the strip off of ETN for the fumble for 97 yards and a touchdown. The big games that they have, they when they win, the defense is very opportunistic. The games they struggle, look at Virginia Tech. They got zero turnovers, and BC's offense turned over the ball five times. So you see that, BC almost kind of lives and dies with that turnover, and Halfley preaches it. He preaches stripping the ball, and, they have a whole a system of, giving each other points on that kind of stuff at practice. So there's a lot of pride in that, and I think that's a big strength of that defense are the turnovers.
Yeah, I think, relying on turnovers is something that maybe both of these teams do, although Syracuse literally lives and dies with the turnover and often dies by it. Flipping it in the other direction, what would you say is the biggest weakness of this defense?
The biggest weakness is penalties. On both sides of the ball, I know you guys talked offense with someone else, penalties have been killing this team. They had 11 against Clemson. They're 88th in the country in penalties called against. Now, Halfley, when you talk to him, he breaks them up into two different types of penalties. There's the acceptable penalties, which are he thinks of pass interference calls as mostly okay because he's teaching his guys to play tight. It's going to happen. So he's okay with those, but there's a lot of dumb penalties. Like I was saying with McDuffie, there was one game, I think he had 45 yards in personal fouls and pass interference calls that he just was out of place. So there's the dumb penalties, the penalties that are totally avoidable. And I think that's a big issue with the team in general, but I know the defense struggles with it too.
Yeah. You mentioned the dumb penalties. I think anyone who watched that BC Clemson game is going to go right to the back-to-back punts. Down at the one. Yeah. Where and then you end up giving Clemson the ball at like right around the 20, I think, or the 25. Mm-hmm. So yep. They definitely have come back to haunt this team a couple of times. So I mean, they did a good job in terms of stunting ETN in much as you can kind of stunt him. Held him to a pretty modest performance for the bulk of that game, especially when BC was in there. We got to tip our caps to you because, Syracuse, Clemson, Ben and I came on here and we both had god awful predictions. Neither of us were remotely close, but your prediction that I saw last week was pretty spot on. I think you had them at 35-24 mm-hmm. and the final was 34-28. So a very impressive prediction. Can we trouble you for one in this game between SU and BC?
So I when I wrote about the upcoming game against Syracuse, I looked at, there's a 14-point spread, but I love the podcast. Oh God, what the heck is it called? I'm totally blanking on it. With Ty Hillenbrand and Dan Rubenstein. I'm totally blanking on the name of it. They talk about spreads. And one of the things that they mention all the time is never never buy in on a rivalry game spread, because you can throw away the records, you can throw away the stats. It's a rivalry game. I'm old enough to remember Diamond Ferry and what Syracuse did to BC in a game where BC was favored big time. I don't think that's going to happen this game, but I think it's going to be closer. I know BC beat Syracuse pretty handily last year, but I'm going to say like BC 31, Syracuse 21. So like a 10-point BC win.
All right. The podcast you were looking for was the Solid Verbal, right?
Solid Verbal. That's it. Yeah. I haven't listened to it in a while because I haven't been able to commute, but that was my big one. I used to listen to it all the time. It's a great podcast if you like college football.
All right. What is the biggest key for SU in terms of, you know, going after this defense for BC?
Getting converting on third downs. If you can continue to move the sticks, especially if you can get that tempo going that Syracuse does so well when they're going, I could see BC struggling with that, especially up front and with the linebacking group. If you gas them and get them tired, there's not a lot of depth up front. So I could see them getting tired and not being able to push. So if you keep the drives moving and getting those first downs, I could see BC getting worn down a little bit.
Well, AJ, thank you so much for coming on. That's AJ Black, the editor and publisher of Boston College Sports Illustrated. And go subscribe to Locked On BC for him. Give him the support over there. Find him on Twitter at AJ Black_BC. AJ, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
You too.
Thanks, AJ.
Thanks, guys.
Another thank you to AJ Black. We've now got two predictions under our belt. Julian picks 30-16 in favor of BC. And AJ, right along those same lines, 31-21 comes Saturday. And a 2 o'clock kick seems like something that Syracuse has not been able to breach for a while. I believe they are all nooners and at 12:30 so far this season. So they're going to be bumped into the 2 o'clock slot. Adjust accordingly. As always, 30 minutes prior, we got countdown to kickoff at 1:30 over on WAER.org or 88.3 FM. So give us a listen over there. Ben, score prediction for this one. We've had some you know, less than ideal picks in the last couple of weeks. Let's get back on the right track.
Before I get into it, I'm going to do a shameless self-promo of when you tune in 30 minutes before for countdown to kickoff, you might hear one of the hosts of this show hosting that show as well. So that'll be fun. But yeah, weird.
It's not me. It's Ben.
Yeah.
It is Ben.
weird 2 p.m. start time. They actually list Louisville the week after as 7 p.m. I hardly doubt that will stick.
Well, it's a Friday game, so it will stick.
Right. Forgot about
they
that.
They do. They get a, you know, primetime game-ish. Because of, you know, they schedule a Friday game, not because of anything this team has done this season.
But I'll get into my score prediction here. We just took a look at the spread, 14 points. The over-under is around 53, I believe. This is an interesting one. You know, on first look, I was thinking, you know, BC's played a lot of close games. They have a handful of one-score finishes, both in wins and losses, four of their seven games decided by one score. But then I looked at October 24th, 2020, of course, when they played Georgia Tech. And I really think the Yellow Jackets are not a team too dissimilar from Syracuse in the way that they struggle to defend the run. They have a lot of questions at offense. Of course, they have, you know, maybe a little more upside at quarterback, but who knows with Jacoby and Morgan. Boston College beat Georgia Tech 48-27. I'm going to go in a similar line to that. I have BC 35, Syracuse 17. I think Halfley goes to the run game, and I think David Bailey burns the orange. Not super optimistic about Trill Williams actually playing. I think it's going to hurt Syracuse on the ground and, of course, in the air as well. I like the Eagles to win big here.
35-17, 30-16, 31-21, the three predictions so far. I'm going to kind of maneuver my way between all of them. I'm going to give Syracuse a little bit more. I like 34-23 in this one in favor of BC. I think Syracuse, you know, they will keep it reasonable, and I think this will be a close-ish game for a little while, but at the end of the day, I think BC's got enough offensively. I love the system that they've got going on the offensive side of the ball right now. I think they'll pull away with this one. So I'm going to go with 34-23 you know, 11-point difference. So maybe Syracuse gets a cover under their belt. And I do believe that that puts the over. No, is that an under as well? So, no, I'm putting over, right? Yeah, I am in the over. Yes, I got over. I was looking at Ben.
I'm just under.
All right. So, you know, some split decisions here in terms of who's going to cover in terms of over under. We'll reevaluate after this week. But the verdict, I mean, you got four predictions here, none of them putting Syracuse on top. We'll see. That's why you play the game. Dino still wants to win. This team still wants to win. They're playing for pride right now, and we'll see how that one comes out. So that'll do it for this week's episode. Find us on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod. Give us a follow over there. We're trying to put out daily polls, daily interactive questions so that you guys can let us what you think. We were talking about, you know, the best presidential pairings yesterday in terms of coach and star, a couple of national championship duos there. So get your voice heard in that poll right now. And then, as always, you know, subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast. Give us a review, write us a rating, write us a review, because those go a long way. We would greatly appreciate those. Thank you so much for tuning in. For Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. We'll catch you next week.